Good morning, everyone. So good to be back with you. And I want to echo what Ronelle, my wife, said. We are so grateful to you for the gift of 10-week sabbatical. Particularly grateful to Eric and the team of elders and wives who I just kept on hearing messages from you when we bumped into you saying they are doing a fantastic job, not just holding the fort, but I believe it's been a summer where God has met you in powerful ways. So thank you so much. It's been an incredible gift to be able to rest and carve out space and time to reconnect with Jesus in deep ways, reconnect with one another and our families and our souls. And I'm really trusting that the rest that Jesus has given us would overflow to you in felt ways. So hi, we were able to travel quite a bit. We also visited the church in Thailand while Dan and Marsha and some of their team were here. We did a pulpit swap and that was just such a treat. We were able to take our kids on some great vacation moments up in Santa Barbara. Some kind friends in the church gave us use of their condo there, and then we also dropped off our oldest son in Chicago at college, which was gut-wrenching, man. No one can prepare you for that. It's been amazing to have my folks with us for some of the time out from South Africa, and so they've kind of filled a little bit of the hole that that has been left by Asher, our oldest son. But one of the things that I do to try and feel closer to him, because we've never done this before. A number of you are at college, starting college, just left home for college. I tell you what, it's much more exciting to go than to send. And so I got home from Chicago and I saw my son's 2002 Chevy Impala at the top of the driveway, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's there, but he's not. So you know, in the name of keeping the battery going, I drive his car every couple of days because I just kind of feel closer to him, you know. And but the problem is the battery is really, really bad in that car. He should have changed it, and I haven't changed it. And because of that, we've actually had to call AAA twice. and they come, you know, and they always do the diagnostic on the battery and tell you how bad it is. You need to change the battery. But because we're with AAA, they give you a jump start. They charge it. And, you know, after a couple of times, the guy's like, you really should stop calling us out and you really should change the battery. And I'm like, just please jump start it, please, for me. And, you know, this series on sacred rhythms that I'm landing is, for me, a little bit like that in the sense that we do have moments where the battery of our soul is jump-started. And those are God's gracious moments. Hopefully, gathering on a Sunday to worship is a bit of a trickle charge, a jump-start to the battery of your soul. And we have other moments like that. But sacred rhythms, finding the rhythms of Jesus, of prayer, of devotion, of fellowship, and today I'm going to talk on the sacred rhythm of Sabbath. Is more than just a battery charge. It's a battery change, which takes longer. It's a little bit more uncomfortable. It requires that we allow God to lift up the hood of our soul and do some deeper work, actually some changes of the rhythms of our life for long-term power. Does that make sense, that metaphor? And so I want to talk about the sacred rhythm of Sabbath today. And it's coming freshly out of our lives because as much as it was fun and a privilege and exciting to travel, for 6 weeks of our sabbatical, we were actually at home. We were hiding out at home. And we wanted to be here. We visited other churches, which was great. And they always say, welcome home. They, you know, one guy gave us a mug that said, you belong here. And he was a cool guy. He was like my age, but much cooler than me. He had like all earrings and hair all over the place. He looked kind of like Derek Zoolander, you know, with like blue steel, you know. Like, you belong here. And I've even got the mug. It's like a mason jar covered in leather. You belong here. And I was just like, no, but I don't. I don't. I belong here. And that's just one of the beauties of being back. It's not just to preach and to lead. It's like, we belong here. We've missed you. We've missed worshiping with you. And if you're visiting with us for the first time or second time, I feel your pain. It's hard to find belonging. Church shopping is overrated, man. I mean, we enjoyed going from church to church, but honestly, after 3 weeks, Renella was like, really? Another church with strangers and weird mugs with you belong here? You know, I hope that you find belonging here. But I feel something of the pain of looking for home and looking for belonging. And you know, as much as we missed here, because this is one of our sacred rhythms of worshiping with you, the deep rest of our souls actually didn't come on some far island looking at some perfect sunset. As much as that's beautiful, it was actually some sacred rhythms in our lives that were pretty boring, but brought us closer to Jesus. Devotional rhythms. We went for prayer with a couple in the church every week. We each had a spiritual director. I went on a solitary retreat to an abbey called Prince of Peace Abbey, and it was hard, but actually Jesus met me in that. And so this sacred rhythm of repetition, following Jesus' life of repetition, is what we need, not just to charge the battery of our soul, but to change it and give us a new one. That's what Jesus wants to do. The challenge, before I go to the text, about talking about sacred rhythm is that many of us are really fearful of repetition, aren't we? We're fearful of monotony or religious ritual, etc. And I read a quote that I think will help us lean in to Jesus' sacred rhythms. And it's by G.K. Chesterton. I won't put it up here, but won't you just listen? He says, because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. Children always say, do it again. Those of you who are parents know that. And the grown-up parent does it again until they are nearly dead. Do it again, Mom. Do it again, Dad. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. It's interesting, isn't it? It is possible, he says, that God says every morning, do it again to the sun. And every evening, do it again to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, do it again, but has never got tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. God is strong enough to exult in monotony, are we? And I want to look at what it is to exult in the monotony of Sabbath. Of rest. The word Sabbath is similar to the word sabbatical. And it comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means to stop, to rest, and to rejoice. Where God in creation on the seventh day rested from his work and said, it is very good. He rested and rejoiced. And I realize in the fall there are a couple of dangers about talking about rest. Firstly, because it's go time. Normally people are casting vision, and this pastor is saying rest. And I know your professors and your bosses and your school teachers and your coaches are saying, go, 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 go. And I'm worried that if I say rest, you're saying, oh, that's just one person that's not making a demand. So I'm not signing up for life group. I'm not signing up for serve team. There's danger in talking about this. But I want you to hear what I'm saying, not what I'm not saying. I'm not saying check out. I'm saying actually in a rhythm of work, of industry, of productivity, there's a rhythm of rest that God set into the very wiring of our souls. There's obviously as well the danger that the wrong people hear this. Often the diligent hard workers don't hear this, and the people that are chilling out in their parents' basement, feet up, playing Xbox games endlessly, go, great, Sabbath, I'm going to rest another day. But actually, we'll see in Scripture that 6 days shall you labor, one day shall you rest. So of course there's danger, But for me, talking about Sabbath is absolutely vital, even as we go to class, even as we go back to our jobs and to our schools, because rest is hard to find. Deep rest is hard to find. So let's go to Mark 2, 23, and we're going to look at Jesus, who's actually accused of being a Sabbath breaker. And we're going to look at him as a Sabbath maker for us. This is the word of the Lord. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with them, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him? And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath." Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal them on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." Beautiful words. "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed him from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. It's Jesus accused of being the Sabbath breaker, but Jesus is saying, no, I'm Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus is the Sabbath maker. And what we see here is Jesus walking with his disciples on the way to synagogue, and they're hungry. They'd probably had a busy week and hadn't had time to cook, and so they see some heads of grain. There was no 7-Eleven opened 24/7 to grab a quick Coke and a hot dog. There was no drive-through to get a latte and a breakfast sandwich from Starbucks or whatever. On the Sabbath, everything was shut down, shut up shop. And what had happened was the Pharisees had taken the principle of the Sabbath and had multiplied many other laws. And one of the laws, the 39th law that they had made, was you may not pick grain on the Sabbath. So they were breaking that law. And they accused him of being a Sabbath breaker. And Jesus reaches back to David and his soldiers in the Old Testament, just finished a battle. It was like he was saying, "Me and my disciples, we've been fighting, we've been working, we're exhausted, we're famished, we're tired and hungry, and God has provided just this thing right for us. Can't we just pick it?" And he begins to provoke them, saying, "This thing, this Sabbath law, it was meant for man. Man was not meant for it. It was not meant to enslave us. It was meant to sustain us. It was meant to give life, not strangle life." And then he goes on even more as if to provoke, and he heals this man. If you go through the Gospels, it's amazing how often Jesus healed on the Sabbath. He's saying, well, which is more the essence, the heart of God? To destroy life or to bring life? Surely this is the heart of God. And he uses this beautiful word, "Come here." And then he stretches out his hand, the shriveled hand becomes whole, and the word is, he was restored. Isn't that beautiful? And so Jesus cuts to the essence of God's intention for Sabbath, that it was to restore life. And I want to look at us in a culture that doesn't know how to stop. In a culture that is running to stand still. In a culture that wears busyness as a badge of honor. Have you noticed that in conversations? It's like, how are you doing? Busy, man. And it's like busy one-upmanship. You think you're busy? Man, I am busy. It's like you might have the stripe, sergeant busy, but I'm captain busy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am captain of busy. And we see it kind of as a badge of honor. I wonder if we like, if we called it what it is. Like, how are you doing? Man, I am really addicted to work. Maybe we should call it what it is, you know? Or, man, I've got a restlessness of soul. I am like a cat on a hot tin roof. But we put this kind of honor on it. And so Jesus begins to teach his disciples, the Pharisees, and us that while the Sabbath was never meant to enslave us as a law, it was a gift to restore us, to give us life. And Jesus said about himself, I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to fulfill it. I came to repurpose it. And he actually had the authority to wipe it away. There were some laws that he just said, no longer. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye, for a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, if your enemy curses you, you turn the other cheek. He had the authority to redefine it. And actually, he leaves it in place as a principle, not a rule, but a rhythm, a gift. And so as followers of Jesus, we have a responsibility to say, so what did you mean, Jesus, when you said, man is not meant for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is made for man to give life, to restore it. What does that mean? And I think if we're honest, first century Jews needed to hear the second part of that statement, not man for the Sabbath. Because first century Jews had generally forgotten the gift of the Sabbath and they were enslaved to it. But I would suggest that 21st century Americans need to hear the first half. The Sabbath is made for man. Because we've ignored it. I've told you before that Ranelle and I had a front row seat to the practice of Sabbath for about 5 years in Johannesburg. We bought a house in a very Jewish neighborhood. And I've got some Jewish lineage that I'm very proud of, and I was very, very excited to catch a glimpse of how this community practiced Sabbath. And we actually bought a house from Orthodox Jews, and we lived in their granny cottage for 3 months while the sale went through, and we got a glimpse. And part of it really put me off because it felt legalistic. Their kids, they had this delightful pool, and their kids were not even allowed to swim in case they made a splash. And they were not allowed to switch on or off a light because that was doing work. And so they had their whole house set on a timer that on Friday night, when Sabbath began, to Saturday night, it was automatic on and off. And I remember one night, on Friday night, we said goodbye to friends who'd been over for dinner at about 11 p.m. And Anthony, the owner of the house, called me in. He said, Alan, please won't you help? And 11 p.m., all the lights were on. He said, I forgot to put on my timer. And there's this, like, on the DB board, this little button. He says, please won't you press that? And I was like, you can't press it? He was like, no, it's too late. Please won't you press that? And I was like, okay. And all the lights went off. He was like, thank you so much. And I walked away, on the one hand, like really thankful for the grace of God, but on the other hand, a bit arrogant. Oh man, he's so enslaved and I'm so free. And I've actually preached that quite a bit. But as Ranelle and I have thought about their rhythm of Sabbath, yes, while there was legalism, we've actually gone, no, there was something beautiful about what they did. Because on Friday afternoon, there was a flurry and a scurry to cook three meals because they weren't going to cook, and they unplugged and they walked everywhere. They went to shul, to the synagogue in the morning, and then they just ate and they napped and they read and they ate again. And there we were running our errands, and they were just like napping and eating again. And we're like, whoa, what have we missed? Man is not meant for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath is meant for man. It's hardwired by our Creator for the good of his creation. And just as Jesus is grieved, it says, that the Pharisees seem to be missing the point, I believe he's grieved that people who've understood grace are also missing the point, that this is for us. So let's quickly flip back to the origin of the Sabbath, where God the Creator in the Genesis story, Genesis 1:31 says, God saw that everything that he'd made, and behold, it was very good. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work he had done. You think you've had a productive week? God in 1 week made all the heavens and the earth and everything that was in them. And we know the Bible says God never gets tired. The everlasting never grows weary. And yet, on the seventh day, he rested. And he blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work he had done in creation. Let that sink in. The culmination of creation is God stopping. God stopped. The Almighty stopped. And it wasn't because he was tired. It was because he wanted to take pleasure in his work. It was very good. It was very good. The heart of Sabbath is joy in what God has done. It is good. It's not even finished. I mean, God carried on creating after the seventh day. I mean, he's creating galaxies and supernovas all the time. He's creating new daisies and new suns and moons to rise. He's carrying on creating. But he was like, that's enough for now. It's good. And then later under Moses, in the Exodus, he calls his creation to imitate him. Exodus 20, verse 8. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock. This is amazing. He's saying, Sabbath is not just for the rich. It's also for the servant. It's not something that you graduate to, Sabbath. No, it's the very image of God in man, even the servant. And then it says, even the livestock. Like, don't make your cow plow on the Sabbath. They needed to give their animals a rest. It was amazing. Don't take your dog for too long a walk. Or the sojourner within your gates. In other words, this wasn't just for God's holy people. This was for the immigrant. Legal and illegal immigrant. You be kind to them. You don't put your feet up and make them work your backyard. He's saying, actually, they are image bearers too. For in 6 days, the Lord God made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. In other words, God is saying, do you not think I'm powerful enough to empower you to do what you've got to do in 6 days? Look at what I did in 6 days. You don't think I can help you to do what you've got to do in 6 days? Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. You know, if the Ten Commandments were a pie, a full third of that pie was about the Sabbath. In other words, it's really important to God. And let's just fast forward. Americans have never worked this much, ever. You read the stats. We are working 37% more than Americans worked 50 years ago. If you talk to anyone over 50, tell us about what Sunday used to be like. Or for a Jewish person, Saturday, they will go into rapture about how everything slowed down and people all got dressed and went either to synagogue or church and then came home and had family dinner and no 7-Eleven was open. The historians say that was the beginning of the end of 24-6. America used to be 24-6. And people were okay being bored. We are terrified of boredom. We're terrified of monotony. And everything shut up shop. You know, if you do the math, ignoring the Sabbath means actually you ignore 11 years worth of rest in a lifetime average span. And you think, oh, we can just change that and nothing will happen. Come on now. I don't have time to go into the stats connection between workaholism and anxiety and depression. There's such a connection, friends. So stay with me in the essence of the Sabbath, because some of you are running ahead and saying, but my boss won't allow me, and my kid's coach, and my professor, and you know, what day should it be? Let's just stay in the essence of God's rhythm of work and rest. You know, the Japanese have a word for working yourself to death. They're famous for it. It's called karoshi. But Americans, stats say, work more than Japanese. We work 100 hours per year on average more than the British. 200 hours per year on average more than those lazy French. 300 hours more than the Germans. Multitasking is a prized social skill. Our devices, so-called labor-saving devices, our labor-saving devices have just made us work more. You know, you remember there used to be that time when you got a key to go to the office, you know, and you used this key, you opened it up, went to work, and then locked it and went home. Well, there ain't no key really anymore, right? Because you can be on call the whole time. And even if it's not our work, our boss is on call. We are often slavishly, I mean, we're not using this thing. It's using us. And it means that we're restless. Judith Shulevitz, a New York Times columnist, wrote a column called Bring Back the Sabbath. She's a Jewish lady. She says, about a decade ago, I developed a full-blown weekend. Perhaps because I'm Jewish, it came on Friday night. Sorry, weekend crisis. My mood would darken until by Saturday afternoon, I'd be unresponsive and morose. My normal routine, which involved brunch with friends and swapping tales of misadventure and the quest for romance, made me feel impossibly restless. I started spending Saturdays by myself. After a while, I got lonely and did something that as a teenager, profoundly put off by her religious education, I could never have imagined wanting to do. I began dropping in on a nearby synagogue. I realized I was suffering for lack of a Sabbath. There is ample evidence, she says, that our relationship with work is out of whack. We are slaves to overachievement because workaholism has become the norm. The Sabbath, the one day in seven dedicated to rest by divine command, has become the holiday Americans are most likely never to take. But when Sabbath was sacred, not only did drudgery give way to festivity, but the machinery of self-censorship, listen here, shut down too, stilling the eternal inner murmur of self-reproach. The Sabbath is a gift that is not just supposed to cause our body to rest. It is supposed to still the inner murmur of self-reproach. And that's where we move from Sabbath as a gift to Sabbath as a struggle. Because many of us may have bosses that have impossible demands, struggling to make ends meet, working 7 days a week, etc. But actually, if we're honest, the struggle often is internal. So that when we do get some time to rest, there is an inner murmur of the soul. The murmur of self-reproach. In other words, we try and justify ourselves by our work. That's why it's so hard to stop. Sometimes we justify ourselves by our work that gives us money, that can cause us to buy stuff, that makes us feel better about ourselves too. But often it's the very work that is at the center of our, or study, center of our identity. And I found on sabbatical, just real personally, after 6 weeks, body rested, soul murmuring. I went to a friend, Tom Sappington, and we began to talk about my tendency to justify myself through my work. Which is why even when I've got space to rest, why is my soul not at rest? You know what I realized? Just myself, it might not be you. I am not fearful of failure in my work. I'm terrified of mediocrity. I hate the idea of being just average. Any of you like with me? Hate the idea of just mediocrity, which means that when I'm supposed to rest, which is normally Friday, supposed to down tools, put my laptop and my phone away, I'm thinking of that next sermon, the next meeting, the next blog, the next assignment. I've been doing an 8-year master's assignment. And I'm going, I know I should rest, but maybe just another couple of hours will get me just another 10% better. Because I hate mediocrity. Justify myself. See, my friends, that's the struggle for Sabbath. It's not just, oh, there's not enough hours. That is a thing, but there's another thing. Let's move it to movies. Remember that old Rocky movie where he's against, who's the guy? The first Rocky movie. Come on, help me. Apollo. And he says, I'll try and do it with the curled lip and the bad Philadelphian accent. You know, I have to win because if I win, then I'll know I'm not a bum. This bad. That was so bad. So bad. I'll know I'm not a bum. In other words, his fight was going to justify him. That's what drove him. Think of the movie Chariots of Fire. Eric Liddell. You know, 100-meter sprint. And he's actually a believer who refuses to run on the Sabbath. Even the Prince of Wales comes and says, if you love your country, he says, I love my country, but I love God more. They moved the race for him. And there's this tragic, he wins it, spoiler alert, but there's this tragic line by his competitor, Harold Abrahams. Listen to it. It says this. He's talking about running, justifying himself through running. I will raise my eyes and look down that corridor 4 feet wide with 10 lonely seconds to justify my whole existence. My friends, only Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, can still the murmur of the soul of self-reproach. Sabbath is much more than a day. Sabbath is a person. And that's why Jesus said, the Son of Man, it's a moniker for the Son of God who came to save and rescue, even as Lord of the Sabbath. In other words, he was saying, I am your rest. Don't you love these words in this passage? He says to this man with the withered arm, come here. Can we hear him in our withered souls with the inner murmur of self-reproach? Hear the Lord of our rest say, come here, come here. You see, the essence of Sabbath is for restoration, not just of body, but of soul. Hear the words of Jesus in Matthew 11, 28. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble, and I will provide rest for your souls. Sabbath. Deep Sabbath rest. What Tim Keller calls the REM of the soul. You know when you sleep, there are different levels of rest. The deepest is REM, deep rest. Jesus calls us to that REM of the soul. And my friends, that is only possible when we allow him to still the inner murmur of the soul. When Jesus in the cross cried out, "It is finished," he was saying that the real work, the work that rarely justifies us, the work that rarely defines us, is done. And you know, because Jesus cried out, "It is finished," we can hear God the Father say, like he said in creation, "It is very good. It is very good." You are still, and I am still, a work in progress. We've still got work to do. We'll always have work to do. But the finished work of the cross causes the Father to say over us, "Matt, it is very good. Mandy, it is very good." And when we start to work from that place of rest, not trying to justify ourselves, but saying, "I have been justified," then work is more pleasurable. That's the deep rest of the soul. The truest thing about you, friends, and me, is not the work we do. It's the work that's been done for us. And so I'm going to get on and land to looking at some healthy disciplines for finding Sabbath, but can we just hear the Spirit's prompting? Allow him to deal deeply with our tendency to justify ourselves through our work. Because if we don't, then when we do get space, we will be like me, a cat on a hot tin roof. My poor wife, after 6 weeks, she's just saying, what's wrong with you? I mean, the church is giving you like all this time to rest and you're wanting to blog and you're wanting to prepare sermons and think about vision. And she's just saying, find your rest. I had the spiritual director. He made me say this over and over and again. Alan, say after me, my soul finds rest in Christ alone. My soul finds rest in Christ alone. Say after me, my soul finds rest in Christ alone. My friends, it sounds so stupid, repetitious, but actually the Spirit of God began to minister so deeply to me. Oh, Lord, He is the Lord of our Sabbath. Finally, some good Sabbath rhythms. Two inner rhythms and disciplines. One is the discipline of what I would call resistance. It's interesting that when Moses gives the second articulation of the law in Deuteronomy 5, he says, the Lord who rescued you from slavery to Pharaoh calls you to practice Sabbath. Deuteronomy 5, verse 12. In other words, Sabbath is an expression not of legalism, but of freedom. He's saying, you're no longer slaves to Pharaoh. Now live Sabbath as free people. But that requires resistance. That's why I ask, we need to ask, who's our Pharaoh? Maybe it is our boss. And maybe we need a gracious conversation with our boss. My first day job, I was selling records, CDs, when you used to pay for CDs. Remember that time? And my boss dangled the carrot of extra hours for promotion. And I was on commission, and I was working to make a target, and he said, if you are the first to arrive, last to leave, I will make you sales manager. And I played at his game for a while, and then I realized, this is a terrible game. New marriage, involved in church, trying to keep healthy rhythms, and I went to him and I said, I want to be sales manager, but I actually cannot. I give you my word, I will make target. Every month, I always made target. I will work hard, but I can't play this game of earliest to arrive, latest to leave. Actually, I've got a life. It's not easy, but we've got to have those conversations with respect and then show yourself to be the hardest working person during the day. Don't be a slacker. We need to be able to say no sometimes to our kids' coaches. We've had to say no at some stage. And I'm the soccer dad. I'm the guy who got red carded for being too like, oh, on the sideline. I love that stuff. I mean, my son has just got a scholarship at Trinity to play football. I love that stuff. But there was a time at which the coach was Pharaoh. And he was just saying, this scrimmage, that game, forget Sundays. And we actually had to take our daughter out of soccer for a whole year. It broke our heart. There goes the scholarship. I'm hoping she'll play soccer at Biola one day. Oh, there goes the scholarship. But actually, it was resistance, practicing resistance. And God has been kind. The new coach understands that not because we're pastors, but because we love the people of God and worshiping on the Sabbath. That actually, that's really important. Practice resistance. Practice trust. I know some of you are saying, I'm not trying to justify myself. I'm just trying to make ends meet. And I have deep empathy for that. It's when overtime offers you an opportunity to make ends meet, it's hard to say no. But my friends, God is saying, I'm the one who made the heavens and the earth in 6 days. Trust me. I can make ends meet. I did a bit of research on Chick-fil-A. You know, don't you only ever miss Chick-fil-A on Sunday? I'm like, I never think about Chick-fil-A. And then when it gets to Sunday, I'm like, Chick-fil-A! Man, I drive past it on the way home. Chick-fil-A, come on. And you know the pressure that the founder, Truett Cathy, has been under to be 24-7? But I read about it. He decided 24-6 will be 24-6. Why? Because people are more important than profit. You know, God has blessed them. They are the most profitable restaurant of their kind per square foot anywhere in America. Come on, let's practice the inner discipline of trust. And then finally, some outer disciplines. Firstly, plan for it. It might not be Sunday for you. Maybe for some of you, it starts Saturday lunch and ends Sunday lunch. But plan for it. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. You know what they say. Just plan for it. If you've got young kids, have a conversation with your kids. If you've got roommates, have a conversation. Guys, Sabbath is important. I'm going to unplug. I'm going to withdraw a little bit. So I might not be able to be at all the parties on Saturday night. Just plan for it. Maybe even rush to Trader Joe's and get 3 meals beforehand so you're not rushing around cooking. For me, on my Friday night, you will find me smoking. That's how I slow down. I smoke. Meat. I got you. I knew it. But you know, everyone's like, well, I'm out of here, man. Even my assistant, she's like, I'm out of here. But because it forces me to slow down. It forces me to slow down. It's like 6 hours for that meat. Because I just know, I just want to go. Microwave culture. Speak to your kids. Speak to your friends. Plan for it. Unplug. See this thing, this little button here. If you've got iPhones, this little button, it actually switches the phone right off. Right off. It's amazing. Not just to reset for a new app, you know what I'm saying? You know what we need to do? This is not the Lord, this is me. Cancel all your push notifications. All of them. You don't need them. You go on the app when you need it. Don't let the app rule you. These things, they are using us. We're not using them. For 10 weeks, friends, I did not post or blog. I mean, there's that thing of like, there used to be that philosophical thing of like, if a tree falls in the forest and no one sees it, did it really fall? Now it's like, if a sunset happened and you didn't take an Instagram of it, did it really happen? And I saw some great Instagrams. And the elders had said, because they know it's a problem, no Instagramming. No pictures. It nearly killed me. I mean, Vietnam. I was in Vietnam on an island and you didn't see any of it. And I was like, did that really happen? But honestly, I've come back. My wife just loves it, you know. But I've come back and I've said, I want to re-engage this thing with fear. Because we must use it, but it can't use us. I think, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. Gen Xers rebelled against their parents by getting tattoos, you know? I think Gen Xers' kids will rebel against us by getting flip phones. By getting landlines. Because why? They grew up with mom and dad just going like this. And they're just like, I don't want that. I don't want to be connected all the time. I want to be connected to Jesus, to my soul. And I think they've got a point. Unplug. Have a time in the week where you unplug. See what it'll do. At first, you'll detox. But on the other side of boredom, Jesus will meet you. Third, show up. Show up. Show up. Jesus showed up to synagogue. If anyone had authority to just say, I'm not going to organize church. I'm just going to hang with my disciples. Come on, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. And some of us go, no, I'm not going to organize church. It's full of Pharisees. Jesus went to synagogue that was led by Pharisees. I'm saying, go to a healthy church, but show up. Because my friends, the best sunset in the world, and I love great sunsets and beach and paddleboarding, etc., but that will not give you the deep rest of your soul that comes from aligning yourself with the finished work of the cross and taking joy in what God has done. That is the heart of Sabbath. Show up with your friends. Make it a regular rhythm. And withdraw. Practice even an hour once a week of solitude. Just try an hour of solitude. Some of us hate being alone. Get on the Fullerton Trail. We've got such beauty here. Just get alone, especially if you're codependent with your friends. And then finally, indulge. I love the fact that Jesus and his disciples, they're just like, this is a great ear of corn. This is amazing. We're just going to enjoy God's creation. Like, have dessert. Like, have seconds. If you, like, have been doing keto or or paleo or whatever, like I have this season, just like have a cheat meal. Indulge. Sunbathe. Go for a mani-pedi. Whatever. Go for a surf. Enjoy God's creation. Don't you see that Jesus went with his disciples to the sea and said, prepare a boat for me because the crowds are crushing me. Isn't that amazing? He ate, he worshipped, and then he withdrew to enjoy God's creation. We've got to start somewhere. None of us will go away from here saying, we've got the whole Sabbath right. But actually, if we come first and say, this is more about a person than a day, and then, Lord, teach me some rhythms together with my friends and family that have me making every effort to enter into his rest. I believe, we will get beyond the need for battery charge, and there will be change of the battery of our souls.